Hello, I'm Silver Rand, welcome to episode 220 of the Rand Nez Podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. So my plan this evening is, last week, I'm hoping some of you managed to join us, we had our 24-hour live stream. So I thought it'd be good for us to go through the games we play on the live stream, talk a bit about them, and what they were like and what we're doing, just a brief run through of each game. So it was the first one that I've been back on in probably about 3 years. Normally, when Scad's been able to do it, it's clashed with when I've worked, so I've not been able to do it. But thankfully, I was able to join this one, and actually, we had to get Zabe on board as well. He was able to remote in with us as well and join us. We also, over the course of the night, had some other people dropping in and out, which was quite cool. And we had Stewie and Jet jump in as well, which was really nice to see people and come in and go. We had some other some big multiplayer games as part of that, which was really quite neat. So let's go through the games we played. So first of all, the first game that was played was, and I didn't start, so I joined in a little couple hours later because I was still working that day. So Scaz and Zaber start off the first game, which was Escape First Alchemist. By the time I joined in, I hopped into the game, we sort of relaunched it. They were about 2 hours in, 2 hours I was going to say. So, and they'd done about 80% of the game. So I saw the last sort of segment and they'd done a lot of the work already when I got there. It's a puzzle game, bit like We Were Here. Main sort of difference, and actually I didn't realise that Escape First was a series. That's actually from what I could see, lots of Escape First games when I was looking on how long to be earlier. But it's a puzzle game, a bit like We're Here. The difference is you can do it single player or you can do it co-op. Unlike We Were Here, which is a co-op only game, and you spend most of the games, you spend the majority of time separated from each other, or you can see each other but can't quite enter the same boundaries together. And by spending that time separated, you have to sort of like discuss and work together and talk to people what you need to do, and that's all the skill is your description between each other. Escape First Alchemist, you don't do that, as it can be played single player, it can be played co-op, so you will just work as a group solving the puzzles. Puzzles were fair from the ones that I were involved with, were quite interesting. They involved a slight bugbear, is anything involving colours, I'm colourblind, Sky is shade blind, anything involving colours is really difficult, and given how you are colourblind, getting to those, if you think of a colour-friendly mode for us colourblind people, or just don't put colour-based puzzles in, because a good chunk, I think it's like 10% of men are colourblind, something like that. So there's a good chunk of people who can't see your game. So just think about us when we put that sort of stuff in, or have a colourblind mode. But you basically are doing something with an alchemist. Like I say, I missed the first part of the story. So it's something about an alchemist trapped in the book. You have to try and rescue him. Voice acting is atrocious. There's a certain style of game, a certain style of voice acting, which is like they really hammer up for the sake of hamming it up, but it doesn't really make sense and it doesn't sound natural at all. It sounds really jointed, disjointed. And Escape First Alchemist is like that. The voice acting is terrible, but the overall puzzles were quite neat. The ones that I said did was start off involving a telescope, having to look up sort of symbols, picking a color, and using that color to then you have to go down and sort of make the color up on one machine and then make the symbol on another machine that would then stamp and create an amulet type thing. That was neat. That was quite a neat puzzle. The other puzzles that I got involved with were quite neat. I don't think many of them were particularly, at least the ones I was involved with, none felt particularly complicated. There was not a lot of challenge to what I played anyway. Like I say, I can't talk the first couple of hours because the guys played that. But for my, I don't know how long it's been a 2 hour long game. So they've been actually a couple of hours when I got there. So perhaps they were a bit more challenging. But overall, it was a quite a fun little game. It is about 13 quid though, and it's a game you are going to do in about 2 hours. So, ooh, that's a lot of money. So perhaps a game to pick up on a sale type situation, but otherwise it was a very neat game. So we moved on from Escape First Alchemist, and we moved on to Gang Beasts. And Gang Beasts was a fun game. That was the one where we had lots of people from the community jump in. There was five of us sort of in total playing Gang Beasts. And it's a physics-based, very similar to Human Fall Flat. I think Human Fall Flat came out like the year before Gang Beasts, I believe. And Gang Beasts is set, is not made by, it's not by the same company, but it's very similar in design to the point where you can almost think they're made by the same company. You are basically, it's basically a little like sort of mashup free-for-all combat game. You're all physics men who sort of waddle around very slightly uncontrollably, and you can punch and grab and headbutt and pick people up and throw people around, and it's fun. You definitely need a controller. I was playing with mouse and keyboard and basically found it virtually impossible. I think the few times I did win a match was more by luck than anything else, rather than actual anything resolving any degree of skill. But even the ones with the controllers were sort of initially were struggling, but last time went on, Zaber especially got really good at it, and to the point where he's almost felt like semi-professional when he's playing against Zaber. What is quite neat about it is the levels, there's only about 8 levels in the whole game, but they are really, really neat. They are all got a deep sort of twist on them. So there's a level that's set in like an aquarium, and there's this big sort of like tank in the middle where this octopus comes up and will throw its tentacles out, and it'll randomly grab players and drag you to the depths and drown your character and kill your character off. There's one where you're in a place with an incinerator and you can throw people into the incinerator. There's one where there's a place with some grinders and you can throw people into the grinders. There's one where you're two trucks going down a motorway and you're on top of the trucks. You get to jump about and sort of like try and knock people off and stuff. Every level's got a unique thing. And that's partly because that the way to beat, you can't actually kill another player directly. You have to kill them environmentally. Either pushing them off something or throwing them to a grind or drowning them is a very common way to kill off players. But you won't win by just beating up other players. Your characters are basically invulnerable to each other. It's really like watching a load of toddlers in a ball pit fight. It's that sort of style. They thought that they ain't really got a great deal of control over their limbs and stuff yet, and they want to try and kill each other. It's really very similar to that. But it's a fairly night and neat game. Really great fun. Works best if you've got a good group of mates to play with you. So if you've got a good group. I mean, I think you're working with small groups, but I would say you want sort of like four, at least sort of probably 4 people. But I think even 2 people would have great fun, but definitely gets, it's a game that I feel will get better when you have more people. And get sort of say 4 or 5 of your mates, hop in, have a blast. And we played lots of games. We played for several hours that game. That was real good fun. And each sort of set of matches really quick. There are other game modes as well. There's like a versus mode, where you can go, you'll be put into teams against other players. There's a mode with waves where the enemies will come at you in waves. That is tricky because you're playing as AI. And the AI starts off as like normal characters. Eventually, these like really big bastards come through the door, and they're really strong. And they can absolutely mullet, like just send you fly across the map and you're out of the game. You only have to defeat 3 waves to win each of those wave modes, so they're quite good. Each set of matches are fairly quick. But yeah, overall, Game Beast was a really fun game. Really enjoyed that game. And it was sort of a nice sort of free-for-all. And it's a game you have to think too much about. And you'll have a fun time if you, like me, constantly lost every match they're in, apart from the few you've won by fluke. Next up was Armello. We have discussed Armello before many, many, many years ago on podcast. It's a absolutely wonderful game. It's as part of all the games we played that was of that evening, it was probably the one I enjoyed the most. It's a digital tabletop game. So it's a digital tables like board game, but only the PC. As far as I'm aware, they've never made a physical version of it, as far as I'm aware, but I must have done no research into that at all. So maybe they have. If they have, drop in the chat and we'll ask. Or I might have looked, see if I can find it, put in the show notes. So you are a digital tabletop. The base game is, and the basic story is, there's this thing called the Rot, and the Rot is infected the king, and the king is going driven mad by it. But everybody's still he's still got some law to him, and you represent one of 4 kingdoms, and the 4 kingdoms are bears, wolves, rats, and rabbits. And you basically represent these kingdoms, and you are all vying for the throne. You're sort of meant to be sort of fairly high up ranking like nobles, like the head of these clans, and you've decided that you're going to make a move. Sort of Game of Thrones of animals. And the start of the game, the king basically has, I think he starts like 10 health. But every sort, and it has two phases, a day phase, a night phase. And it's every day phase, he loses one health. So basically, when his health goes, the game ends. So you basically got 20 turns to win. So what you do in the game is you have to go around and pick up quests, and you have to go and either complete these quests. You may capture villages. If you capture a town, just by walking into it, it becomes your town, and that will generate money for you every turn. You have cards that you can like use against other players, other towns, and just all deploy on the map. You can also attack other players. You can attack the King's Guard. You can also attack these like Bane, which are these sort of bird things that sort of fly around, crap things and interfere things. It's all little complications. There'll be like traps can be placed. I can't remember what they call it. It's almost like a trap basically, but you'll get like a little skull across and appear on some of the tiles. It's a hex based game. And on the tiles, these little traps will basically, if you walk into them, you'll have to have fight or complete the trap card first before you can continue. So how do you do combat? It's a dice-based game. And the amount of dice you get is based on your character. It's based on, as you pick up, some of the cards you can pick up are equipment cards, which will add a certain number of dice types. You can also, during the combat phase itself, you can burn cards. Each card will have a little dice symbol on it. And by burning that card, you will get that type of symbol. So the basic symbols you're after when you fight is like swords for attack and shields for defense. And by burning if you've got a card that has a sword on it, you burn said card, you get a sword dice thrown in extra free. So that's our way to sort of move the odds. Very simple. You'll roll all your dice. Every sort of sword gets put into one pile. Every shield gets put into another pile. There are other symbol types, but I'm going to stick to the basic ones for time being. And for every sword symbol that you're up against your opponent, you'll knock off one of their defense dice. Their defense dice count as one of your swords. And then so you're, and I believe the fight normally works, attacker goes first. We're playing this quite late at night, and this is what, it was a week ago, so I'm doing this all from memory. So you're basically, although it's attacker go first, even if you get kill your opponent, they still get their turn, so it doesn't really matter who goes first. But yeah, everyone of their defense dice will count one of your swords, and then anything that's let through will take some health off the opponent. They do the same in return, their roll dice, counter with identifies, and then take you off. So it's possible for both players to kill each other in a turn, because you, regardless, even if you have roll eight swords and they have no defense dice and you absolutely kill them, they still get their turn. So you can still both win and lose in the game. And that happened a few times in the matches we played. So if I place, why you want to do that? Well, you get prestige points by attacking other players and killing them. And you just get prestige points for completing quests and other sort of similar sort of things like that. So when it comes to quests and when it comes to like sort of these like traps, they all again welcome the same dice-based system. So a quest you've got, when you do a quest, you'll have the option of a safe selection, or you'll have the option of a risky selection. The safe one, you don't have to do anything. You will just get no combat will happen. You'll just get it. But you only get some really basic stuff, usually a bit of money and some magic or something. The unsafe version, you basically have to roll a load of dice and you'll have, I guess, a bit of combat. And this time you'll want specific symbols, not necessarily shields and stuff. You want a specific set of symbols. You can also burn cards to give you, guarantee you, one of those dice become that symbol. Unlike combat, where it basically becomes an extra dice thrown in, this actually just converts the dice you've got into that symbol. So it's a way of guaranteeing it, but you basically, if you haven't got white sword cards, you basically end up, if you burn the wrong type of card, you just throw that card away and waste time. So it's very powerful. Now, if you defeat that, normally you get a better outcome. You'll get like an extra reward. It could be a piece of equipment. It could be a follower who helps you out and so forth. It is an absolutely beautiful game. It is absolutely beautiful game. It's very complicated. I've really sort of covered the sort of top level stuff for this game. There's a lot of strategy involved and so forth. Each of the races have different abilities. that you can use in the game. It is just so wonderfully neat. It looks gorgeous. It came out 2012, I believe. And it's but it looks still gorgeous. All the cards have got beautiful animations on them. And they sit there, and even when they're like sort of sitting in your hand, they're just animations sort of playing. So they all look beautiful. The character animations look beautiful. Every part of it is such beautifully done. The game is, as I said, fair. It's no longer sort of being supported. It's pretty old now, but it's definitely one to pick up. It is great. I said, I hope they made a tabletop version. If they did, I'd probably pick up a tabletop version of this game because it is neat. They added a lot of extra stuff. And when we last played, it was in early access at the time, I believe, still. So there's still a lot to be added. And when we then sort of played it, then it's now seen a lot of stuff done. You've got a lot more control. The host can like control a lot of the turns. So by default, there's a turn counter for everybody. You can switch that off. You can do lots of other controls. You can change the health and so forth. You can have the king not lose any health. Because the two win conditions in this game, there are two win conditions. One, but in the default mode. One, kill the king. If you kill the king and you survive the encounter, you win. If the king dies through either rot or you killing him, but you dying as well, or someone else killing him and dying as well, then it goes to what they call prestige victory. And that's whoever has the most prestige points. So in both games we played, I won both games via prestige because I had the most prestige points. It's also another neat thing about prestiges. Well, another little neat thing about it is that if you are the highest ranked prestige player, every turn during the daylight phase, the king will basically ask to make a decree. And these can be sort of like fairly minor stuff, like, oh, everybody's scared a little bit more to the king. Or they can be quite nasty, like, oh, we're going to put a load of traps around the castle. And it gets quite nasty as the queen gets more and more rot, they get nastier and really, like, no, there's no good option at all. Sometimes you'll have one that's like, well, this is great benefit to me. It's crap for everybody else, but for me, it's great. I'm going to pick that one. And you have quite a bit of power, and those specifically only last like one, I believe they last like one turn. There was one, I think, which is like basically anyone who's not got the highest prestige gets attacked, the guards will go after them. And so I was had to send guards after everybody because I had the highest prestige. It was great. That is an absolutely fun game. It's going to be a four-player game. If you don't have the fourth player, it'll be filled up with an AI. And the first AI we had was a fucking rabbity thing who's a real pain in the ass. You're absolutely despised and hated. He's a little stupid, smug grin. And I was so glad every time we killed him. But he was annoyingly tough. But honestly, it's still a game worth picking up. Again, if you've got like a little mates group who all pick up and like to play the game, it's quite good. Involves a bit of thinking. There's definitely a lot of deep strategy involved in Armello. You can feel it's there. And I can see like more experienced players doing a lot more in-depth stuff with it. But yeah, Armello, honestly, I'd say it's a great game. We then sort of moved on to a game we've played on Games Night before and we've talked about on podcasts before. We wanted something a little bit not so cerebral because some of us were flagging a little bit from Armello. Because at this point, we're getting to about 12. Well, I've been about best part of 12 hours in. I say, like the other guys at Skaz, but they've been out for like 14, 15 hours in. So we wanted a little bit more things. So we went with Four Guys. It's basically, depending on how old you are, it's either It's a Knockout or Wipeout. Those are your point references. And you play one of these little guys who are all wearing sort of funny, sort of like charity marathon suits. And you have to basically go through a series of levels. It's meant to be like implied that it's like a TV show. So you have to like get from like one end of the level to another. In general, they usually most levels are like a race style level. So it'll be you and you'll be placed into a match with the original version when we played as 40 other players. It's now been changed to 32. I'm guessing the player base has dropped off a little bit and struggling to find 40 player games. So that's 32. So you get into this 32 player game and you will head off and the mission might be right, get from one end of this map to the other. And there's lots of maps. I can't go through all of them, so I'll just pick a few out. And between you and there, there'll be lots of little like tasks. There might be like discs with spinning arms on that you have to jump over, and you have to jump from disc to disc. he then may have to avoid some swinging balls that swing back and forth and will knock you off into the abyss. And if you get knocked off, you just respawn like at the last checkpoint. So you always have a chance. And you, most people, I think, end up getting knocked off at some point in each match because it is that difficult. Some players are just absolutely skillful at it. And then at the end, you'll have a certain number of people need to qualify, and these people have to get across the finish line. So let's say you start facing players, it may say, oh, we need 20 people across the quality will qualify because of the finishing line. So the first 20 players get across, they qualify, they move on to the next round, the other 12 are out of the game. They can either stay, those players in the game can either stay and watch the others, or they can go start another match elsewhere. I was playing again with mouse and keyboard because I didn't have a working controller, and I was absolutely terrible at this. There's one I got wiped to the last mansion, last little map, but overall was pretty terrible. So after you do the first one, you then do another one, and I say most of them tend to be race style things. Some are like sort of like a versus combat one. So one of the ones that you'll see fairly often is like some players will have a tail. And those players, if you've got the tail, when the time runs out, you will qualify the next level. You will go to the next level. If you haven't got the tail, then you're knocked out. And anyone can just walk up to you, just quick grab, and their tail becomes theirs. So in those matches, you're trying to avoid other players whilst O's are being chased. And if you've got the tail, you're trying to avoid other players whilst O's are being chased by other players. And if you lose your tail, you've got to go try and grab back off somebody. So it's a bit of a free-for-all. Those matches I find actually quite fun. They're quite stressful. They are quite fun as well. There are ones where it's what they call survival mission, where you are usually, and they vary. So it could be like there's a big rolling disc, which has got a cylinder sideways, and each cylinder parts of the cylinder has got there's like four or five segments to it. And each segment might have some gaps, might have some walls. And your goal is to stay on the cylinder and survive. And basically the game ends once enough people have fallen off. And then those people go on to the next level and so forth. Then usually you get to see, in the version we played originally, there were like versus modes as well, where like there'd be like a football type match you have to play. We didn't get any versus modes, I don't think, when we played Four Guys with us. No, I can't remember us playing any versus game modes at all. It all seemed to be all against each other, or all technically against each other. I can't remember. So I wonder if they've pulled them out. Maybe, or we just never played any. We didn't play for a great deal of time. Eventually, you get to the final level, and that again, it's usually a survival style level. And again, it works versus the other ones, and it's last man standing. Or it could be a race. It could be a race top and grab a crown. It's also a fairly neat game. The levels I don't like are the ones where a great deal of luck is involved. I don't mind losing levels with skill, because I'm not particularly skillful, so I don't mind losing those sort of levels, because, well, I'm not particularly skillful, it doesn't matter. What I don't like is levels where basically there's some sort of roll of the dice whether you're going to win. So the perfect example of this is there are levels where there are doorways, and they'll be blocked all off. And imagine like several like rows of walls, and each wall will have a number of doorways in it. Now, some of those doorways are open. If you jump at them, they all look the same at first. But when you hit them, they'll give way and you can get through. Some, however, are blocked and you can't get through. So you basically are racing along and you are trying to find the doors that are open. So everybody races towards them, all jumps at a door and hopes it's the one that's open. That is per luck based, because as you're driving through, you'll be going through quite well, knocking three or four levels, and all of a sudden, the door you had to do is now solid. You may have been leading a pack, but now you're the back of the pack because the one halfway down the other side where the other group players have gone to isn't. It's also random. I don't particularly like those missions in it. I feel that there's no sort of skill strategy to it that you can employ to work your way through. You are just basically rolling the dice. I want the missions that have a certain degree of skill, timing, jumping, and so forth based in them. So you feel like it feels fair when you lose, as opposed to just, doesn't feel like a bullshit loss. So I quite like 4Games. It's great. They used to, when we first played, it was a terrible hacker issue. people just full of hacks, and you could literally just watch players, and they basically just basically could like infinitely jump, so you could just sit at the top sort of like infinitely jumping up high and floating in the air. So any mission that involves survival where you need to you know, keep on something, you just they just used to sit and fly in the air, just stay there, wait. I'll wait to win. They could also like fly across the maps as well and stuff, so they could just you fly to the end. It was terrible. And to the point that's what soured our experience with it. I think that's the reason we stopped playing Fall Guys originally, was that we were so soured by the hacking, and it was pretty terrible. But this is a game that definitely you'll need a controller to play, mouse and keyboard. I'm sure there's someone out there. There's going to be someone out there who plays with a mouse and keyboard, their feet, and gets constantly first place in Fallout Guys. But for us mere mortals, we don't get that. So we really could do with a... You need controller support to play this game. What's also quite nice about it is when you finish a match, it's very quick to get into another match. It's really, you can burn through them. And each match you play is fairly short. You're probably playing a match in less than sort of like, if it takes you a maximum of like 10 minutes to play a match, it's probably an exaggeration. And it's really short, really quick, really nice. So Fall Guys was a nice, fun game. And it's a game you don't have to think too much about, which is nice. So at this point, Zabe went for his break after playing Fall Guys, and so me and Skaz and Jet, we went into another game, which was Human Fall Flat. And we played Human Fall Flat a lot end of last year. Me and Skaz worked through most of the missions last year through it, but we got to put a Steam version, because that was on Stadia we played it, which is obviously, you know, RIP Stadia. You know, it's gone to the great Google discontinued service Game in the Sky area. So we played Human Fall Flat, and we got the Steam version of it, which is quite expensive. Luckily, CD Keys came to the rescue. And yeah, it's a physics puzzle game. You basically go on a level, and you have to work from one place to basically get to the exit of the level. And to do so, you have to complete little challenges. And they're quite involved. So each level has a theme. So it might be, you know, a theme around a construction site or theme around a power plant. Very loose theme. And you have to basically work your way across, and you'll be like building structures with physics objects. You'll be knocking things over, jumping, climbing, perhaps powering things up. There's some neat levels. We played like a Holocaust level, which was quite neat, because we had to find like a battery and wire and stuff and power up a Frankenstein monster to get to the exit. What we do find is it's possible... Well, Skaz said he found it's possible to sequence break this game fairly easy. If you get good at climbing things, you can basically just climb around the outside of the level and then just bypass whole segments of the level and miss all of it. And the way the game works is once one player gets there, all players move to that checkpoint. You have to get to the checkpoint yourself. So it's quite common for us when we're playing it for one of our players to get to the next segment, and everybody else is like, oh, we'll just jump off and respawn then, and we'll spawn with you, saying they have to try and find their own way across. I firstly find it quite fun. Probably wasn't the best thing to pick that time of night, because the brain was starting to wills at that point. Skaz went off sequence breaking, and me and Jets all did the air quotes proper way. But it's a neat little game towards. Definitely, it's another sort of like party game. If there's a third of you, it's quite fun to play. But you need to, again, you need a controller. We had a lot of games which require controllers this year. I've got a controller, it just doesn't work. It just chose not to work that night. So, Human Fall Flat, nice little game. We talked about it previously, so we'll move on. At this point, we played Human Fall Flat until Zabe returned. At which point I then went off for my little break of the evening, and Skaz and Zaber went into a podcast favourite, probably one of my favourite games we've ever played on Games Night, probably my favouritest game we've ever played on Games Night, and definitely I think it was Game of the Year for both of us 1 year. We both picked this game a year a couple of years ago, and that was Hunt Showdown. We have discussed this more recently on the podcast, so I'll give a very brief summary, because we've discussed it quite a lot. You're basically a hunter. You are. It's set in the American sort of Louisiana. I'll cut that bit eventually if I remember to do it. Louisiana State, and you are a a hunter, basically, and there's weird shit going on. I have now read the backs. There is a backstory to Hunt Showdown. It's not really explained anywhere in the game, but I managed to find. Apparently, there's a book which has got some stuff in it which you can read. But I've now read the backstory. And it's basically about like a Alvin Riley entity pushing things to our world, and you basically have to go and you'll have to find these clues. These clues like sort of like, and your hunter isn't just an annoying hunter. They've basically been like injected with stuff to make him special. You're on the map, you find clues. The clues will lead you to a monster. You kill the monster. You then have to banish the monster. Once you banish the monster, you can pick up a shard and you can escape the shard and you get a bonus. The bit that makes it a little more tricky is that there are other players in the match trying to do the same thing. So matches can have up to 20 players in each match, and there's only like maybe one or two monsters. So there's only two shards per monster. Well, so in a one monster game, there's only two of those players can get those shards out of 20. So you're going to start shooting each other. And that's where most of sort of the gameplay really comes down to, is finding other players, getting the drop on them, or hoping your players die. Sometimes you'll be lucky and all your players will have been killed or exiled before you get there. We've definitely had a couple of games where like, well, no one's taking this shard, let's grab it. And the reason is that all your players have been killed. Some players will just lie in wait and camp out and try and take you out. Some will hunt you down. There's a lot of good players in this game. Xavier Scansbury had a really good time. They had quite a few sort of matches where they were like being chased and escaped and extracted and got a drop on people. So they had a good time. That was neat. But it's a game we've talked a lot about on the podcast, so I won't go into depth on it anymore. You can check out previous podcasts and listen to it. We've certainly talked about it a great deal. But honestly, as a competitive shooter, I don't particularly like playing against other people, but I quite like playing Hunt Showdown. It's a very stressful game. The whole time the game is loading, I'm under stress. The whole time we're playing, I'm under stress. But as each match ends, it's amazing. There's permadeath in it as well, so as your character dies, they're gone. Certain special characters you can re-equip, but the sort of like generated hunters, they're gone. It's a really neat game. You can play up to three players on a team. So I strongly recommend, if you've got a couple of friends who want to go, this is a game to pick up and play. It is really good fun. If you don't mind being shot by some random player in the head, even though you have a rifle that you swear couldn't hit you that far away. But overall, it's a really neat little game. So after Hunt Showdown, I came back and Skaz took his little break. So me and Zaber. Now, this is a shocking thing. Despite being a PC gamer, Zaber has never played Portal 2, or Portal for that matter. He's never played. It's shocking, I know, that he must be the only PC gamer who has never played Portal 2. So I convinced him to join us in the co-op mode of Portal 2. So co-op mode of Portal 2 is, for the other PC gamer who's never heard of Portal 2 out there, it's a puzzle game. Made by Valve, released about 15 years ago. The Portal 2 was about 2008. Yeah, about 15 years ago, I think Portal 2 came out. And you basically have to go through this facility, and to assist you, initially, your main tool is this portal gun. And literally, on valid surfaces, you can play one bun will fire one portal, one bun will fire another portal, and these are linked. And wherever they are, you can jump through them. You can also do things like fire one above, one below, and you create like an infinite loop, and you can then use that. And because whatever speed you go through a portal, speed you come out, speedy thing goes in, speedy thing comes out, you can use that to like jump gaps and get places. The co-op mode, there's two of you doing the same thing. You're generally in the sort of same areas, but you'll be sort of adjacent to each other areas, and you'll be able to use portals to help each other out and also get places. It is a really fun game, really simple. It's got some simple mechanics to make it easier to mark and point and so forth. In general, most of the levels don't require a huge amount of timing stuff, but there are quite a few bits where you are like, oh, we never have to time this at the same time. And you can't do them without the other player. So a good example of that is there are two buttons high up on the wall. You've got no way of reaching that, and on walls you can't put portals on. But the base, there's two floor plates with portal positions, places you can place portals. So there's now, and then now a bit around the corner where you can place a port, two ports above one of each other and below each other. So you do that. You play one player will place a port above, port below. The other player jumps in. They get accelerated up to pretty high speed. The first player can then go place one portal, which will be the exit portal of the pair they've set up. So the next time the player is dropping down, they'll go through the bottom portal and get shot straight up out of this portal at full speed. They can hit the button. You as player one will then reposition the other port. There's a lot of portals going this. It's very hard to describe, but you're going to position the other connected port to the first one you just placed. And as they come up down, they'll go up and they'll come up the other one and hit it. It's really hard to explain. Go watch a YouTube video on it because it's very hard to explain. But Co-op Mode in that is absolutely brilliant. Portal 2 is one of my favourite games of all time. The comedy in it is brilliant. You've got a homicidal robot AI called GLaDOS. You've also got a little like robot drone dude played by Stephen Merchant called Wheatley. The comedy is on par. It's from start to finish. It's such a fun game. Really funny. Really good. The puzzle mode in the main game is really good. The story's even good. It's got the first portal had basically no real story. Portal 2 fleshes the whole thing out. That's got a really detailed story, and it ties in with the Half-Life universe as well. It's such a fun game. If you are the only ever PC game player who's never played Portal, get both Portal, the orange box, and get Portal 2. You can't go wrong. And the co-op is amazing. You and a friend will have an absolute blast playing Portal 2. It is such fun. And thankfully, after we got Zaber to play it, he actually went to... Zaber's not a great fan of puzzle games, but he went off and basically decided to play Portal 2 single player. I don't know how he's got on. I'll have to discuss that with him. And that was it. That was our game start. So we played about seven games in the course of 24 hours. Each one got a pretty good innings. And we have had a very, very good time. It was knackering. It always is, particularly as the inevitable march of time and our bodies gradually give out, gets more and more tiring and more knackering. But overall, it was a really great time. I'm so glad I was able to join in and do one again. They saw the first 12 hours of the hard. Once you get past the 12-hour mark, it's usually not so bad. We had a huge list of games. We didn't barely scratch off half the games we wanted to play. So hopefully we can do that next time. So sometime next year when we decide to do that's 24 hours, we can hit the next batch of games. But very good game. So just out of a bit of influence, I thought I'd end up with those talking about a bit of a TV series that I've been watching, or gave up watching, is truth be told. And that was a TV series that it was on Netflix, it's now left Netflix, but I'm sure it'll reappear on Amazon Prime shortly. Now the TV series called Salvation. Salvation. The premise of it is a bit shaky. The idea is that a physics student, a brilliant physics student, because they always are on their protagonist, always an expert in everything, manages to discover a asteroid that is heading on a collision course to Earth. Seemingly, nobody else has noticed. Not NASA, not the Russians, not the Chinese, not the European Space Agency. No one else has noticed this. You know, despite what they're probably doing their own some things, no one else has seemed to have noticed. And he eventually manages to alert the authorities to it, and he gets help with this guy called Darius, who's like this tech billionaire, clearly meant to be an Elon Musk type character if he wasn't evil. And he basically has to sort of like come up with an idea of how that they come up with an idea of how they're going to stop this asteroid with the facilities they've got. And the main sort of crux is how to stop this asteroid, but that very quickly gets pushed to the background to the point where some episodes it's barely mentioned, because they fairly early on come up with a plan of how they're going to do it. And that's sort of the plan they enact anyway. It's sort of like almost feels like there's an asteroid coming. How are we going to stop it? Let's do this. Okay, good idea. There's not a lot of... When you've got something that's literally just heading to you in a single direction on a collision course to you, there's not a lot of drama to be built up from it, apart from let's build stuff. Most of the drama is based around humanity's reaction to it and the sort of geopolitical scape. So there is... And it starts off sort of somewhat believable. Initially, the drama, the sort of like things that are causing them issues are tensions between the US and Russia. And it's never clear, if it's not clear at first, why Russia has got such change in what the US is doing, you know, creeping this asteroid, and you get that resolved. But then later on, there's a presidential coup, and it basically, from series one to series two, it devolves into just a political mess. It's dealing with, like, random politics and people changing allegiances left, right, and center. It just does, it sort of just loses it. The sort of whole asteroid thing becomes a background detail, really. It's sort of still worked on there. There's like a hacker group called, they're called Resist, I think they're called, who are like, are meant to be a lot of nonsense, who are like insanely powerful, no topic. Just, it gets all a bit silly, frankly. And I basically got fed up with it about three episodes into season two. I made all through season one, and that ends in a bit of a weird situation. And getting to season two, and you know, you've got a terrorist group, you've got a hacker group, you've got all access to nuclear weapons. It just all goes a little bit, a bit weird. There's some stuff that, if you know anything about, I mean, the physics on it is reason, from what I can see, the physics is reasonably good. The ideas they come up with are based on actual ideas people have had to try and stop asteroids. So it works in that regard. But a lot of the overall stuff is just nonsense. There's a bit where they basically, the hacker group demands they get given a supercomputer, i.e. the, and it's like, well, if we give it to, we won't have it ourselves. Like, dude, it's software. You know, just copy and paste. You know, you're not handing over the hardware to them as well. They have to do their own hardware, because when you hand it off, it just shuts down. Because as we know, when someone else installs Microsoft Word, it disappears off your computer, because there's only one copy of Microsoft Word that goes around, and everybody has to share it. No, it's fucking software. You install it on another machine. Come on, mate. It's a science fiction that sort of loses itself fairly early on. And frankly, anything that I find when they start saying, like, a lot of, like, I'm not putting politics as an air quote politics, you know, you want people say, oh, it's got politics in it. I mean political drama in a lot of TV shows, but it's not the main focus, basically just is boring, frankly. And that's basically how the whole South Asian political drama is just boring, sadly. I mean, it has its moments. South Asian itself, the namesake, is actually... Because early on, and this is a spoiler for like the first about episode 4 or 5 of South Asian. So yeah, if you've got any interest in it, find out. South Asian, the namesake South Asian, is name of a ship that this guy has built, which is meant to be like an ark for humanity. It never gets used for that purpose. It's like they've literally dropped the name of the ship in the whole series, and it basically gets sinned like twice. It's just such a random thing to name it off. It's clearly, I think, they intended for it to be more important. And there's a bit at the end of the season where like people get sort of locked down like a sort of habitat where they can't sort of like leave or what have you until like a particular turmoil eases off. But that's sort of every issue that comes up gets resolved so quickly, it all loses its drama. It just doesn't really work. So I can't recommend Salvation. Most bad series I'll watch all the way to the end, because I kind of want the closure. But Salvation, no, I can't recommend it at all. It just drops off too soon. It really isn't worth your time watching it. But, you know, perhaps you'll get some limited material out of it. So that is pretty much everything I wanted to talk about today. So, I mentioned earlier that we've got sort of like some plans for future going on. So, like I said, Skaz had to unfortunately move away from podcast for life reasons. Hopefully, at some point in the future, he can come back and we can have him outside the mic and we can start going back to how we used to do it. For the near future, it's going to be myself. I'm hoping to get some other people on board, like Zaber. I'm hoping for discussions with him to try and find a way that we can get him coming on as a second person on the podcast. I might see if we can reach out to people we've had in the past and come on here. This may mean that we may have to change and choice, because we may change, like, to fit around everybody. Like, the date we broadcast on might change, or the day specifically. At the moment, we broadcast every fortnight on a Saturday. That may change. Discussion will be coming ahead, so you won't see a schedule for the next podcast straight away, because I need to arrange things, what we're going to do. We may have to do something, like we may have to pre-record some, just broadcast pre-recorded stuff. We're going to figure something out. The plan at the moment, we are still going to keep doing games night. That is still planned. So the next games night is going to be this Wednesday, which is the 11th, I believe. Let me just check the date on that for you. Yes, the 11th. That'll be our next games night. And again, me and Zeb are going to discuss what we're going to play. Probably we might hit some like co-op games, like sort of like story-based co-op games. I think would be quite cool. But we're going to discuss that as well in the future. So watch this space. We're not going anywhere. We're not disappearing. Thank you very much for joining us. You can please join us again in the future. That'll be on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/randnerds, or it's on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/randnerds. Date to be confirmed. You can check out Games Night. You can check out my Games Night stream, which will be on twitch.tv/stuffagram. You can check out our website, randnerds.co.uk. And I'm going to say, once again, thank you for joining me this evening. Look forward to seeing you in the future. So for me, stuffagram, it's been a pleasure. And we'll see you on episode 229. Have a good evening.